X-29, number 5A.
The human self must be evangelized. Science and Health, 254-19. Mrs. Eddy knew only too well that this evangelization is not a matter of a moment, but it may require a whole lifetime. I love the statement she makes on the last page of this chapter, because I meet so many students of Christian Science who think it possible to reach perfection through a mere change in thinking, without allowing it to permeate their daily lives, and so evangelize their human self. Metaphysics goes much deeper than thinking. Metaphysics touches the mainspring of life. Now, what are the human footsteps leading to perfection? Mrs. Eddy has marked them out for us in this second part. Human thought must be educated spiritually through inspiration, mind. It must be made receptive and kept receptive to spiritual good, spirit. It must turn from self to soul, soul. It must take on a new standpoint, the standpoint of God and of God's interpretation of the universe, principle. It must learn always to behold the freshness, the newness, the isness, and the nowness of life, life. It must awaken constantly from the dream of mortal existence to spiritual consciousness, truth. And it must become aware of its own falsity and thereby gain perfection, step by step, love. In every one of those subjects, a translation is taking place in human consciousness. Summarizing the whole chapter, we can see that its two parts present two different translations, which are related to one another. In the first part, the Christ as science translates a false, unscientific consciousness and its constituents into a scientific divine consciousness with its scientific constituents. This translation takes place in consciousness and consequently has its effect on human thought. Therefore, we have the second part, which presents the working out of the Christ translation as shown in the first part in human consciousness. Here the time element is introduced, and we get the practical human footsteps leading to perfection. Summary of the Christ chapters. Footsteps of Truth brings us to the end of the chapters on the Christ. Looking back on them, we find one common tone running through them all. In each, we encounter the Christ power at work, exposing, stripping, disintegrating, and dissolving evil. The four chapters on the Christ are one big uncovering of the claims of duality or evil. First, in Animal Magnetism Unmasked, we have a definition of the nature and operation of animal magnetism, the Antichrist. With the knowledge of the Christ, Mrs. Eddy uncovers animal magnetism and gives an ordered statement of the nothingness and powerlessness of error. The chapter, through its counterfeit sense, depicts, therefore, the standpoint of the Christ reflecting the Word. The next chapter, Science, Theology, Medicine, reveals the Christ as the true idea of God, coming from God to man, thereby uncovering and translating the false constituents of existence back into the divine constituents of being. This chapter, which portrays the very nature of the Christ, is written from the standpoint of the Christ reflecting the Christ. Thought is then led to the next chapter, where it begins to sense the forcible outcome and effect of this translation, which is the translation of mortal man. By changing the false constituents of existence, the constitution of man is changed too. Thus, the Christ translation blends with the tone of Christianity, and the chapter, Physiology, illustrates this translation of a mortal or a mortal seeming into an immortal. The standpoint there is that of the Christ reflecting Christianity. Now, this translation of the mortal takes place in consciousness, nowhere else. Unscientific mortal consciousness must be translated into a scientific divine consciousness. And this translation is presented in Footsteps of Truth. The standpoint of the chapter is that of the Christ reflecting science, for it is science and scientific knowledge that form true consciousness. Through these Christ chapters, God is translated to the point of divine consciousness. Equipped with such a consciousness, thought is able to perceive a new universe, the true creation, the realm of divine metaphysics, the universe of ideas. Thus, the Christ chapters link on to the next four chapters, dealing with man and the universe as idea, as the rhythm and dynamics, and infinite reflection of ideas. The focus there is on idea. As we proceed and go forth into these chapters, we shall do exactly what Mrs. Eddy says in the last paragraph of Footsteps of Truth. We shall launch our bark upon the ever agitated but healthful waters of truth, and by doing so we shall win and wear the crown. Creation. With the chapter Creation before us, we have arrived at the third set of chapters, those depicting the standpoint of Christianity. As you remember, the first four chapters were concerned with the Word. They all dealt with the question of how to approach the infinite subject. The next four chapters illustrated the Christ, especially in its office of translation, showing how God translates himself to the point of divine consciousness. Now, what is this divine consciousness aware of? It is aware only of ideas. It is never aware of illusions. Turning towards the realm of ideas, thought is led to the third main standpoint of the textbook, to the standpoint of Christianity, which has to do with the nature of ideas, the operation of ideas, the coherency of ideas, and the demonstration or using of ideas. The next four chapters focus their interest primarily on ideas. I say primarily because ideas are naturally always equipped and backed up by God. The first chapter to introduce this new aspect, the Christianity aspect, is creation. Creation here is not concerned with the act of creating, but with its outcome, the creation. The chapter presents and describes the universe of ideas, as well as the way to this universe of ideas. Its standpoint is that of Christianity, reflecting the Word. These different standpoints may not be clear to you yet, but as we go on and as you begin to ponder these chapters, they will become quite natural to you. We have here again a few pertinent introductory statements to this new chapter. Mrs. Eddy says, "Eternal truth is changing the universe." Science and Health 255.1. This statement is a most appropriate bridge over from the last chapter, which showed that erroneous consciousness had to be translated into a consciousness of truth. As this translation takes place, the universe begins to change too. Thus, eternal truth really does change the universe. It changes a universe of illusions into a universe of ideas. It changes a purely material or mental universe into a spiritual universe. Mrs. Eddy continues, as mortals drop off their mental swaddling clothes, thought expands into expression. Science and Health, 255, 1-3. This one sentence can be taken as the keynote to the whole chapter. Our mental swaddling clothes are all the mental restrictions and limitations, all the immature thinking, binding, and fettering us to narrowness. As we let these mental limitations and restrictions drop, thought expands and ever expands into infinity, into the realm of ideas. The great theme of this chapter is that mentality must give way to spirituality. The mental swaddling clothes with which the chapter starts must be dropped for the white robes of spirit with which the chapter ends. As we go through the text, we cannot fail to notice how this expansion from mentality to spirituality is brought out again and again. It explains the change from mortal thought and concepts to human thought and concepts, until finally thought blends with the spiritual and is replaced by spiritual consciousness. In other words, creation teaches that thinking must give way to spiritual consciousness. Right thinking is still limited and restricted to awareness, to the occupancy of thought, whereas spiritual consciousness is above thinking and dwells in the realm of the boundlessness and limitlessness of ideas. A tremendous sense of breaking limitations pervades this chapter. The expansion in it throws off all restrictions. It frees us from belittling deity with human conceptions, from taking limited views of everything, from human forms and physical finiteness, from narrow limits, from being bound or compressed, from formalism, narrowness and coldness, from finite life and love, from finite conceptions and mortal thought, and all the many other prevailing restrictions. In short, the finite must yield to the infinite. Science and Health, 256, 1-2. This is the reason for the great tone of infinity which runs through the pages. They are permeated with a strong sense of the vastness of infinity, with a sense of limitlessness, of allness, boundlessness, inexhaustibility, of infinitude, of the infinite range of spiritual immensity, of the unsearchable realm of thought and idea. All the while we can feel a tremendous expansion of thought taking place. The vista opens wide as thought rises into the spiritual realm. Pondering the chapter, we are imbued with a sense of resurrection and exaltation, lifting us higher and higher from a boundless basis, exalting us to a higher and wider sphere of thought and action. We feel as if we were soaring into infinite spiritual space. From what I have already said, it is quite evident that another main point of this chapter is that not only the mental but also the human must be dropped. Whilst the second part of Footsteps of Truth postulated the gradual translation of human consciousness, creation now leads thought into the realm of the real, into the universe of ideas, where there is no more room for the human or any other transitional stage. Human theories, human conceptions, and human shackles have to be laid off. Creation has to do only with ideas. The first subject describing this realm of ideas states that creation is the infinite image or idea emanating from infinite mind, that all is mind, mind. Mrs. Eddy points out that creation is not a finite concept, that human conceptions, consequently, can give no correct view of true creation. Creation is not what men think it is. Creation is a realm of ideas created by infinite mind. This infinite realm of ideas cannot be perceived by limited sense or from a finite basis. If we want to grasp creation, we have to go out from mind and mind's ideas. The second subject gives us the substance of this realm of ideas and says that spirit, not matter, is the substance of an idea and of creation, spirit. Here we find the declaration that matter is not substance, and that there is no real substance besides spirit. Any belief that there is substance in anything but spirit is pantheistic. Only ideas, therefore, are substantial. As this realm of ideas is spiritual, it can never be in anything, and so its identities can never be finite either. The third subject explains that the image and likeness of God, man, is not mind in matter, that man reflects infinity, that he is the infinite idea, soul. It is noticeable how beautifully Mrs. Eddy builds up her subjects. The first great claim about creation is that it has its origin in matter. So the first subject corrects this false view by stating that all is created by mind. The second great claim, which then looms up, is that mind creates through matter, or with the help of matter, and that both mind and matter are substance. The second subject rejects this pantheistic view by declaring that the substance of creation is spirit, and spirit only. The third great claim is that mind is in matter and is identified through matter. The third subject repudiates this erroneous concept, identifying man not as mind in matter, but as the infinite image and likeness of God. Man is not finite and cannot be made finite. He is idea and reflects infinity. I very much like the definition Mrs. Eddy gives of man here when she says, God expresses in man the infinite idea, forever developing itself, broadening and rising higher and higher from a boundless basis. Science and Health, 250, 13-15. Remember that in physiology, our covenant was to know that a corporeal mortal has never the right to the name of man. Man is idea. Man is not body, whether that body be perfect or imperfect. This leads us to the fourth subject, which takes us a step further in the description of the true man, that in science, man is the infinite idea, as perfect as the perfect principle. Hence, man is not a solitary, imperfect idea. An idea is always infinite because its principle is infinite. This subject teaches that man as the idea of principle is a generic term, that man's range of thought is unlimited. Man is referred to as the reflex image of God. The lost image or imperfection can therefore never be termed man. Having seen that the idea which is as vast as its principle, is man, we are led on to the point where we are told always to behold this idea as our true selfhood, as our true manhood. The fifth subject presents the fatherhood of man, which exalts thought to the contemplation of man as an immortal idea, life. What Mrs. Eddy portrays here is not the fatherhood of God. We are in the Christianity chapters, which have their focus on idea, not on God. Christianity reflects the fatherhood of God as the fatherhood of man, and so this subject explains that we have to father our true self as idea. As a rule, people go only as far as to take the standpoint of the Word and the Christ. They recognize in the Word that God is the Father, and they also accept the Christ standpoint, that God as the Father fathers us. But very seldom do they take the Christianity standpoint, where they have to father themselves and others, where man fathers himself and others as idea. If we want to be a real father to ourselves, we must contemplate and behold our true self as idea and not as a mortal, and supply and clothe this idea with all the ideas of God. Through this fifth subject, Mrs. Eddy shows that we should have a perfect model in thought and not an imperfect one, that we should exchange the mortal model for the immortal model, and that by looking away from the body to the immortal model, we shall receive the blessings of life. Working from the standpoint of the immortal idea, we reach the center and circumference of our being. We must never forget, however, that this being is of the nature of idea. From the fatherhood of man, the text takes us to the sixth subject, to the sonship of man, where the sonship of man claims the truth of creation, truth. The sonship of man entitles man to claim himself as God's idea, to claim himself as the man of God's creating. In short, to claim and take possession of his divine heritage. Man must be conscious that he is the very truth of creation. It is not enough just to father ourselves by establishing in thought the ideal man. We must also claim that ideal man as our true manhood. The fatherhood of man and the sonship of man must naturally be made complete with the motherhood of man. And this is brought out in the last subject, where the motherhood of man confers heaven, love. Mothering ourselves means loving and cherishing our true selfhood, so much so that we do not mind sacrificing the material, the human, and the personal self for it. It means loving ourselves as idea only, and thus finding compensation for everything in the spiritual. In this way, man is seen to reflect father, son, and mother as one universal idea, finding all within himself and requiring nothing else. Thus, man is found to be a complete idea. How did we reach this climax? We started in the first paragraph by being told to drop our mental swaddling clothes. And in the last paragraph, we find ourselves wearing the robes of spirit, which are white and glistering. One by one, we have had to lay off our constricting mental garments concerning creation, our human finite views about man and the universe, and the infinite views or vestments we put on were, first, when we saw that creation, man and the universe, is idea and originates in mind. Second, When we learn that the substance of creation is spirit, not matter, that creation does not consist of mineral, vegetable, or animal substances, spirit. Third, when we found that creation, the image and likeness of God, is not mind in matter, that infinity is not identified in the finite, in body. Man was defined as not in matter, but as reflecting infinity, soul. Fourth, when we were told that this reflection, man, is therefore as infinite and perfect as its principle, that man has an infinite range of thought, principle. Fifth, when we were shown that with this infinite range of thought, we can father ourselves by beholding constantly the perfect model in thought, life. Sixth, when we realize that we must claim this model as our true selfhood, that we must claim our sonship, truth. And lastly, when we were told to love, cherish, and value our true ideational manhood, love. Through the seven subjects of the chapter, there is an ordered and gradual breaking of the light on human thought, expanding it to an understanding of the statement that man, creation, is idea. Tight and narrow mental concepts, all that is restricted, finite, limited, cold, formalistic, and so on, are discarded for the infinite, boundless, spiritual idea. Nobody and nothing on earth can hinder us from accepting creation and man as idea. As this chapter shows, we have it in our hands to behold this idea, to claim this idea, and to mother this idea. If we do that, something will happen. For an idea is not static, it is dynamic. The next chapter, Science of Being, will reveal to us how dynamic an idea is. Science of Being. We are in the chapters dealing with the standpoint of Christianity, where we consider the idea in its principle. The limelight is no longer primarily on God, but on idea, idea backed up by God. In the focus of our consideration is the universe, including man. We are contemplating the realm of ideas. The chapter, Science of Being, therefore, does not deal with the science of being, God, but with the science of being, the universe of ideas. The standpoint in this chapter illustrates Christianity reflecting the Christ. For here we get an exposition of the universe of ideas in its office of the Christ, in its office of the Savior. We find that the universe of ideas has a Christ and is therefore the Savior to the universe of illusions. Through every one of the subjects, Mrs. Eddy shows how a right understanding saves from the belief of ignorance and also from its effects. It is not a translation from God to man, as we had in the Christ chapters. It is a translation that an idea works on a belief. People very seldom realize properly that an idea has a Christ. Even in everyday life, however, people talk of a bright idea working and admit that only the right idea is needed to solve a problem. In other words, we have to realize consciously that an idea is not something static, but that it is dynamic. The Christ, as you know, is that which is always dynamic, which always operates and always expresses itself. It is the modus operandi. The Christ, applied to the standpoint of Christianity, therefore, presents the dynamics of ideas, while the Christ, as the Christ, presents the dynamics of God. We are now confronted with the warfare between idea and illusions, between understanding and belief, between reality and unreality. We are about to see how a right idea dissolves an illusion, how a right idea clears away the mists of ignorance and brings to light spiritual facts. Let us always remember, however, that an idea does this because it is equipped by God, because it is in principle. The first paragraph is again like an overture to the whole chapter. The dynamic sense of idea can already be felt. Mrs. Eddy starts by saying, "In the material world, thought has brought to light with great rapidity many useful wonders. With like activity have thought's swift pinions been rising towards the realm of the real, to the spiritual cause of those lower things which give impulse to inquiry." Science and Health, 268, 1-6. These two sentences describing thought as rising towards the realm of the real recall the theme of the chapter, creation, and serve to broach the subject of science of being.